Hearts Club presents the first ever episode of the Music Dad Podcast with me, Nico Tatarovic, and my special first guest, the music baby herself, Delphine.
Hello!
Okay. Hello, 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 as I now seem to say at the beginning of every podcast that I do in my increasing universe of podcasts and affiliate podcasts. Oh, he's such a businessman. Anyway, those of you who've been following Stupid Hearts Club from the beginning will know that I have sort of, in the last few months, I've expanded my universe by seeding new podcast ideas in my Patreon as a way of tempting people in to possibly think about supporting me on Patreon in exchange for bonus content and exclusives and that sort of thing. One of the things I was doing in that spirit was I started documenting the sort of little renaissance of doing music and meeting musicians and talking to musicians that has become such a lovely, happy part of my life again since I moved to Brighton. And I called that project the Busking Chronicles because I made a lot of noise about doing a lot of busking. I have done some busking and I intend to do more, but it doesn't quite characterise whatever it is that has happened since I started an uptick in just throwing myself into the music world again, which has been a source of huge joy. In fact, one of the things that is a huge joy is the fact that as a result of kind of the uptick in my musical activities, a bunch of projects have kind of incubated and been born like quite quickly. I nearly said fight quickly, didn't I? I will fight quickly if called upon. But yeah, I it may be documented that through the Busking Chronicles special where I did a Stupid Hearts Club night. There's a recording of that in the Patreon of a night that I did a few months ago. And that was really cool. And a little story goes that a performer that came along to the first night has now become a very good mate of mine, who is Delphine, who is a solo artist and a little German pop space baby who is not an actual baby. I think she's in her mid-ish 20s, but she might want to seem younger than that for showbiz. Show business, Delphine. But anyway, she's ace. She came along and sang at my night and talked to the audience and was brilliant. And after that night, she actually approached me and said, "Hey, look, you're doing a podcast thing, aren't you? It's really cool. Like, how could I do something like that? Will you teach me, old man?" And we got chatting. And quite honestly, there's no point me telling you the whole story because we're about to discuss that story in this inaugural episode. But I just wanted to set up what it is. Spoiler alert, she's the Music Baby, and the Music Baby podcast is growing at pace. You know, the conversation you're about to listen to is before we've achieved what we've achieved since, which I can't wait to tell you about in the coming weeks. But for now, I want you to just enjoy us in our first kind of nice conversation about what we'd like to do. There's basically going to be two podcasts running at the same time. One is going to be, from my point of view, of being an older guy, getting back into music and going off and just finding and interviewing all sorts of people at any level who have somehow still got music in their lives, completely non-judgmentally, you know, busker, bedroom sort of dreamer, someone who sings in pubs, could be someone who sings on a cruise ship, it could be someone who plays the fucking bassoon in a jazz band on a Tuesday night. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just going out there finding people who just, like, have not let music die in their lives, and because I feel so passionate about that, I want the Music Dad to sort of be a champion of don't fucking put your music away and let it die. Get it back out and find it again. But meanwhile, my lovely little bud Delphine is going to be the boots on the ground in Brighton, finding all the young, amazing musical talent in this town. And they are two very slightly different podcasts, but they belong in the same family. I've got to make it clear that I did not give birth to Delphine. That is a theme, a continuous joke that I wish I'd never started, because now every time I speak to her or turn up to like pick her up to do a record or whatever, she's like, "Dad, I'm not your dad. Don't say that. Everyone will think we're weirdos." Anyway, this is a really lovely conversation. And at the end of the episode, you're getting a sneak preview, actually, of the first joint Music Baby and Music Dad podcast, which we recorded at South Lane Studios in Brighton the other week, all properly and posh, and it's going to be on YouTube and stuff. You're going to get a snippet at the end of this episode of two songs that we did together. We did one of each of our songs that we did as a little duo, or duet. I don't really know what the right terminology is anymore. Anyway, I'm the Music Dad. I'm introducing to you the Music Baby. Please enjoy the conversation. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Delphine. Do you know what? I don't know your full name. I mean, I don't even know if Delphine is your music name. I think it's your real name, right?
It is my real name, yeah. My mum always knew that I would be some kind of artist, and she was like, "I'm going to give this girl an artist's name."
No. Who is the artist Delphine that your name is based on, or is it just...
Oh, no, just like a name that sounds like it could be an artist's
very
name.
Good. That's really clever, because she could have easily just gone, I don't know, like, and then named, you know, a famous artist, but instead she went, "No, Delphine shall be the first."
Yeah.
In that voice.
She did, yeah, that's what she said to me when I was born. Remember?
"You will be the first." She held you aloft.
"You will be the first of your name."
Like little baby Superman when he's on his home planet. Did you ever watch the sort of 1979 Superman that I grew up with?
No.
No. Oh, you're missing out. It's cute. It's like when he's first born, he lives on a sort of space planet and everyone's in like robes and it's all very like he's special and royal. And you know what's weird about that film is there's no CGI or any of that stuff yet. But when you watch it, the first sort of half an hour of that film is one of the most beautiful looking, colourful, mad little sci-fi things I've ever seen.
Oh, cute.
But anyway, you're...
I prefer that, though. I like when people really go ham on the costumes and, like, the set design and everything, and there's no CGI, because I feel like these days everything is CGI, and it's kind of like, I'm bored of it now.
Yeah, the trickery involved in making weird effects, like they'd be using, like, weird coloured waters and oils and photographing it through light and putting that on the screen, and then someone would act in front of it, or... Yeah, and like building the little... Why have we started talking about movies?
Oh, I don't know.
It's the movies.
We talked about my birth and then we went right to movies.
Anyway, you're a super child.
Super child.
Delphine the super child. What is your second name?
My last name?
Yeah.
It's Hilly.
How many have you got?
Well, I have four.
Oh, right. Oh, fair enough.
Yeah, four. So it's Delphine, Ashana, Salome, Hilly.
How do you spell this? Look, sounds like I'm doing like ID theft.
Yeah, Hilly. Hilly. It's a very German name.
Oh, right, really?
I don't like it very much. I'm trying to get rid of it. Right. If anybody wants to marry me with a good name, please apply.
I mean, someone's already in the lead for that job, right? Doesn't he get to go first?
If someone with a better name comes along, then I'm happy to swap.
Very good.
Don't tell him I said that.
So, I met you because I do a bit of, I use co-working office space and monkeying around doing my stuff and editing podcasts. And then there's a girl that works at the same place called Molly, who is in an amazing metal band, basically. Is that how you describe it?
Yeah, I'd say so.
And they're doing really well. And they're called Knife Bride. And they're playing like Download Festival and stuff like that. And going off on little tours and making videos, and they're just generally properly at it. And at some point, without a doubt, I'll have Molly on, because that's they're at a really interesting level, you know, properly going for it. And I'm never going to be doing that, but my podcast, The Busking Chronicles, the intention was that now that I want to do more music than I used to do, if I meet anyone who is putting more effort than I am in, I'm intrigued and I want to know more. And especially on the level of, not that it's about this, I don't mean this like in a shallow way, but making a bit of a living from it.
Oh, that's not shallow. You want to make a living from your art.
Do you see
art?
What I mean? Yeah. But I just mean like, it's like, how do I, where's the money? Do I make money? It's like, obviously. No. Yeah, nobody doing art should be doing it for money.
Yeah, but also, I think there's one extreme where you say, oh, I'm only doing this for the money. And then there's the other extreme of saying like, oh, I'm only doing this for the art. But there's also an in-between that where you just want to do it every day. You want to be able to do it every day. And to do that, to pay rent and all, you kind of just have to make a little bit of money at least. And I think that's what a lot of musicians or a lot of artists aim for, where they're like, I don't even have to be super rich. I just want to be able to pay rent. That's all I want.
And the funny thing is, like, I grew up in a generation where all the bands that made it, basically the way the benefits system worked in the 70s and 80s, maybe before that as well, people, it's usually the classic sort of route would be kids who went to art college, they decide they want to be a band or whatever, right? But so you can be unemployed, you can sign on, you can live on a small amount of money, but you can work on your art. So they would basically be, if you like, electively poor to work on their art, and then they would try and hammer it, get gigs, get signed. And so, like, a good example of that would be Pulp, you know, from where, you know, they made it in the 90s, but they were a band from like 1978 or something.
Oh, no way.
And then like a huge 90s and onwards band.
Yeah, yeah.
But they would have been one of thousands of bands who basically didn't have jobs because they just were like hustling, doing the music and however long it takes, or you just quit, right?
Yeah.
What's interesting now is I feel like I've met lots of young music people since I moved here, which is how we've got talking. And there is a logical thing in your generation where you're going, why wouldn't we be doing this in ways that get us paid alongside doing it in the way that is our own art, right?
Yeah.
But in the old days, that would have been like, oh, you can't be doing anything that's like selling out, or even to let your ad be on your song be on an advert, or to sort of like work on the side making like library music to pay the bills or whatever. Now, to me, that would be like utterly sensible.
Yeah.
Especially because even if you're making like stuff that isn't like your pure art, you're still sort of learning something as you go. You might be, and you're practicing, and you're like if you're a producer or whatever, or like engineering or whatever, you're just getting slicker and slicker at your thing. But honestly, until not that long ago, in music, comedy, those two mainly, it's a bit like you have to be like a real purist, otherwise you're, as Bill Hicks once put it, off the artistic roll call. Yeah. And we were really sort of militant about it. So I went to art college and was in love with the whole idea of fine art and purism.
Yeah.
And that, but I also knew it's like, how the hell do you do that? You know, I wasn't into music at that point and started doing music. But the pressure from people who were cool and who had kudos was, you never take money from the man, sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And it is more rock and roll that way.
The last time I saw that being expressed in a broad bit of culture was like, do you remember School of Rock, the Jack Black film?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever watch that?
Yeah.
He's totally got that attitude in that film.
He does, yeah.
He's like, these are the guys who, you know, blood, sweat and tears. You know, and we don't work for the man. We never do anything that is being in the system.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's so hard.
I think maybe, because when I went to uni, I feel like that mindset was still very much around, where we would be like, ah, oh, stick it to the man. We're just rock and rollers. We just do whatever we want, and we're not following any rules, and we're drinking and partying and taking drugs and stuff like that. But then I feel like you do that for a week. And then you realize, well, I do kind of have to pay rent though.
Yeah.
Or I do kind of have to eat. And then you try and find a middle ground between stick it to the man and I'd like some money from the man, please. So.
Well, yeah, no, exactly. Unfortunately, the man has got the stuff that means you can eat food.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing is that that was in a landscape where it was probably worth hanging on. If you got a record deal in those days, if someone was interested, if you're any good, you'd probably be signed for long enough to make quite a few albums while they carried on developing you and let you go off.
Yeah. I feel like labels aren't just, like, it's changed so much now. Like, because you can do it all yourself, the whole label thing is not, like, getting signed to a label is not really a thing anymore. I mean, it still happens, but I feel like people don't aim for it as much anymore because they can just do it themselves on social media. But that also means you have a lot more jobs that you have to do because you have to market yourself, you have to be your own manager and record yourself and everything. So
it's hard to know which is, in the long run, which is actually better for music.
Yeah.
It's hard to know because if you think about it, if someone's like, look, you're great, we can see all this potential in you and we could start like this and start like that and then you could wander off on second and third album trying this and that and we won't be like in the way. And not that it was that simple for everyone, but if you know that you've got like a chunk of money that means that you've got that time, that's got to be good for the music, hasn't it?
Yeah, it is. But the problem with labels, because I've had this dilemma, I still have this dilemma right now. I'm still thinking, like, should I send my music to a label or should I just do it all myself? The problem with labels is they then want part of the copyright to your songs.
Of course.
And then they might also take creative control, so they will tell you what to write about or they will tell you what to look like, so you don't have creative control anymore, which is what a lot of artists care about, obviously.
Yeah.
And like with Taylor Swift, like, I don't know if you've heard, but she, like, the reason she had to re-record all her albums was because her label prohibited her from using some songs on stage because the songs belong to the label.
Right.
So she had to re-record them so that she can actually perform them on stage, which is ridiculous. So, like, obviously that's an extreme case, but it's just like an example to show that labels are just, they can be really dangerous if they're not nice.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. It's in any, again, like the only parallels I have of being in there in sort of a, artist world is having been in the TV industry and worked on lots of comedy things. And obviously, it's the same model. It's the people who are, it's the gatekeepers and the people who are paying for the production.
Yeah.
Thinking that they know what it should be because they think that they know what the audience wants. And there's always a tug of war between the artist and the people facilitating it getting out to the world.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always been the case. I mean, obviously, it's not like no band in the 70s was arguing about their, like, 8-minute guitar solo needs to be in a song. Like, do you know what I mean?
Well, I feel like Queen probably had a few arguments with their label owner to put out, like, obviously, like, Bohemian Rhapsody is a famous example because the song's so long. So I feel like, I think that happens, but that really only happens when the band already has some power over the label.
Yeah.
So if you're still a small artist, you kind of have no power at all.
Yeah. But I love thinking that all the people that are coming through, because, again, just to give some context, I live in Brighton and Hove, which a lot of my listeners already know. Since I moved here a year ago, what's been amazing is it's almost like living in a fruit orchard of cool stuff. Instead of living somewhere and having to go somewhere and find where it is, and like, you know, when I lived in Bedfordshire, there was known to be a few places that had like decent people and there's talented people everywhere, but it's just not knowing where that is for a start, and like there'll be a town over here and a village over there, and just didn't know where to go for like to connect.
Yeah.
And here it's literally like,
it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. And, like, I can walk round and find another one every week.
Yeah. There would probably be, like, buskers out every day anyway.
Yeah.
Like, you could just walk around town and find, like, 5 new talents.
Yeah. That's definitely true. And that's what gave me the idea of starting the Busking Chronicles was, in a nutshell, it was me going back to the money thing just because I've been skint and TV is not really, like, being kind to me anymore. And, like, thing is, if I'm going to need an extra little job, right, and that could be supermarket, could be Amazon driver, it could be Uber, it could be maybe there's a nice cool cafe somewhere. Like, I love, you know, like, do you know the cafe Salvage?
Oh yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
so I'm in a place like that going, you know, maybe I need to start realizing that from now on it's going to have to be a bit more hustling and a few different bits and pieces, a couple of days somewhere like this, you know, doing the podcast stuff, whatever. But then I'm like, I would be much happier singing in a pub
and being paid. That is a good
job. When you do get paid for these things, if you can get paid 150, 200 quid, which is, to be honest, like nationally, a 2-hour set in a pub doing covers should be around 200 to 250. Well, or between 150 to 250.
You'll be very disappointed, I'll tell you that.
You can make that happen, but you've got to work out where that happens and then
So there was a pub that paid, actually, no, not even for 2 hours. So, like, the best you'll get in Brighton, I think, is, like, between £50 and £60 per hour. Mm-hmm. And at first that sounds like a lot, and it is a lot. Like, it's a good job to have, but there's a lot of hours that go in to prepare for that, because first of all, you need a set that's that long. Then you need to practice it. Then, like, it's very full-on work. It's not like working behind the bar. I mean, working behind the bar is also very full, and I also do that. But it's where you get, like, breaks every now and then, and you can sit down and you can, like, make yourself a drink. Like, you're always playing guitar. Mm-hmm. You're always singing for that hour. So it is quite full on. But I think Brighton, it looks like it's getting worse at,
like,
at the moment.
Like, central Brighton is definitely, like, I learned quickly, people were saying, you are not going to get paid loads here because there's so much music here. However, if you go out a bit, and of course, because I'm older, and I'm not, I always bring it up, but it's a thing that I'm using to my advantage, going into it, doing it at different types of places for a different reason is the plan, like becoming a bit like lounge singery, right?
Yeah.
So, and actually realizing that even though I moved here for the music, if I want it paying like that, I'm going to have to go to places like Worthing, Eastbourne.
Definitely, Eastbourne,
out a bit.
I heard.
You know, basically, I need to get better at finding out where I can actually get decent paid gig, because it's totally possible. Like, you do see posters of, like, Sinatra singer guy, and, like, you know, I'm trying to make my thing into, you know, the bit that's for cash. I want to be a sort of bookable, quite gentle, not easy listening exactly, but you know the vibe.
Well, yeah, kind of, because, like, if you want to be a lounge singer, then it has to be kind of easy listening, because people will still have conversations while listening to your music,
well,
or, like,
exactly, right,
having drinks, and then that's perfect. Like, that's a really nice job to have. But
I believe I can make that into something that, even if it was one paid gig a week and two busks, right, in my dream, just going to put numbers on it, say I get a 150 quid gig a week, right, somewhere.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where it is. Although, obviously, then you're paying to travel to it. And a couple of busks where you make between 40 and 50, 60 quid if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, doing that every week when you're struggling for money is...
That's big help.
It's fucking big help.
Yeah, that pays for rent.
It's like, the way I've started looking at it is like... So until about 3-4 years ago, there was always a lot of TV shows I was working on. Mm-hmm. There was always a few hundred quid coming down the pipe, or a few thousand, or... generally was like okay most of the time. It's just not the case anymore. So now I'm looking at it like, what various little bits of things that I love doing can I try and make, if I can make a grand out of that, and if I can make a grand out of that, I'll be filling my time with stuff that I love, right? So the podcast bit is kind of up and running, is working. So the Busking Chronicles was started for me to keep everyone updated with how that's going, and so here we are. And what is interesting is I'm still not really making a significant amount of money, but in the last few weeks, I had a time a couple of weeks ago as I wasn't going to have any money available for another, say, 10 days, and I was done. I was out of money, maxed out, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But, and I hadn't been busking very much, but then I was like, oh shit, like, I've literally not got money for a coffee. So I came and stood on this street and sang for 2 hours and ended up with 40 quid.
Nice.
And I was really happy, and everyone was really friendly to me. And it was the moment where it really popped that this is an excellent way to have, like, your side hustle, Saturday job, kind of whatever, right? And the happiness part of it is, like, the biggest part.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, it's in my power, isn't it? It's like, what you put in, you get out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right? Like, you choose how much you do it. And the good thing is, like, it's not like you have to go look if there's a shift available. Like, you have a shift when the sun comes up and
it's
the sun goes
that,
down.
Right?
Yeah, like, you can just choose to, like, stand outside whenever you want. It's such a great job, like, honestly, busking. I feel like I feel like it's going down a tiny bit as well because people just don't have money and also they don't have cash anymore. But it's still good enough to really believe in it and to really get it going, give it a try.
I have now activated and set up my card reader for a £2 tip.
I've not
done it yet, and I've just bought the new. I've bought a big heavy trolley with nice big wheels.
Yeah.
Because I had like a, your first setup a bit naive, pulling it along, and it's like falling over a bit, and the wheels are a bit crap. But now I'm like, I'm set. Do you know? Do you know August Radio Project? Benedict.
No.
He's a guy with sort of like red hair, a bit of a flick like that. You must have seen him around town at some point.
Oh,
he's
like
around
a lot. Okay.
Yeah. He's a really nice guy. Anyway, he's actually got a YouTube channel purely about his constant busking mission. He's so positive and into it. He demonstrates really that if you know what you're doing and you choose your times and your spots and all that, it's quite normal for him to make about 70 quid.
Yeah.
You know, you can obviously have a really good day where you go even beyond that. But he's, on the busking side of things, he was like a little North Star that popped up, and now I'm so glad that I've seen him because we check in. I'll be having him on here in the next couple of weeks, so that's amazing. But then another side of it that I wasn't expecting is that from starting to sort of just be semi-active and get out, open mics, bit of busking, going to watch a few bands, and then I was asking Molly about my night. I decided to put on the night, right? Stupid Hearts Club. So the first night I'm like, oh, Molly. And she's like, no, we're away. She goes, you should talk to my mate Delphine. And I was like, but she sounds like an artist. The first artist ever called Delphine. And I was like, okay. So she said, look on Instagram. And I was like, I've seen a lot of open mic over the years and a lot of, already around here, I've actually been to a few open mic nights where obviously you get a couple of people and you're like, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
And you also get some pretty crazy
level
what are we listening to? But it's something, not everyone's got the right, and I kind of love it for that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it really is open, the mic.
It really is, yeah. Mic so is open.
And it always reminds me of a funny line I once saw in the comedy newspaper, The Onion. And the headline was, open mic night ruined by every single performer.
Yeah.
And that made
me
laugh.
My manager wrote that, didn't he?
I actually didn't do open mic for ages because I felt that's what it was.
I was like,
don't do that. Don't do that to yourself. But then I came down here and I've been to a few open mic nights where it's like, actually, this is just really a lot of really good people.
Yeah.
Because they need to play, they're out, they come out, they try a couple of new songs out, and then you chat to them and go, that's great, and then they go, oh, there's this other thing, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and what about, have you got an Instagram? And you're like, and then
you go,
oh my God, you're really good, what are you doing? Oh yeah, I've got a few things happening, blah. And then I started realising that the number one thing that's important personally for having moved down here is now, this is about finding people.
Yeah.
And so I did get in touch with you, and then you came to play my first Stupid Hearts Club and blew everyone away. And what was ace on that night was obviously between acts on any sort of night like that, it can be a bit, it goes quiet, it's just people plugging
it's
things
a bit
in.
Awkward. Yeah.
And I'm all right at the chat, but obviously there's still a little bit of changeover. But you walked up, and while you were getting your stuff ready, you just started talking immediately.
That's a big problem. I will never shut up.
No, it's not a problem. It was ace. And I was like, well, this is already good because now everyone's really listening before you even start. And then I didn't know what I was expecting live. But yeah, you, I think it was like a 5-song set, wasn't it?
Four or five songs. I kept going.
And it sounded amazing. And obviously.
Oh, thank you.
And also the fact that, oh, right, so you're allowed, like, because you create your own backing tracks and stuff.
Yeah.
And sort of play. Some of them you're just like singing along to a track you've made.
Yeah.
And then others you're interacting with an instrument at the same time. Like, but I love the fact that it's not one or the other.
Yeah.
And you're
just, you can do both.
Seamlessly, at one point you were like, not sure if this is working properly anyway. Should I do it on the guitar? And everyone was like voting what instrument you did it on. So like, sorry, I talk too much as well. So like, tell me about what you like about performing on those types of nights and stuff yourself, because you do it in different ways every time.
There's so much that I like about these nights, and I feel like the more I do them, the more I want to do them as well. Like, the first one is always a little bit awkward. You're like, oh, I don't know what to do. Like, I have everything prepared, but I've never really seen the audience reaction to it. But the more I do it, the more I love having the audience's opinion in there, like, because they like shout out things sometimes. They're like you said, they vote on which instrument to use. I think I just like, it's not me up on a stage like giving you something and you have to listen. It's more like I start and the audience helps me like finish it, and we like do this together. Like, if I do a cover, people sing along. It's more like a community thing rather than me just like showcasing something. And I really like that. That's what I like about not being a successful artist. It's that you still get to interact with the audience. Because if I was, like, I mean, if I was playing on a stage with like 1,000 people in front of me, I wouldn't be able to like ask questions and talk to the audience and like make jokes with them, because it would just be too many people. But I really like that it's that I'm at a stage where it's a room full of people. They all look at me. I can look at them and I can talk to them. I can pick one out and be like, hey, you've got a cool outfit on. Where'd you get it? Or something like that. It's a silly woman. It's just...
But you're right. It was... And obviously, I didn't know... Other than knowing that I'd been in the room in the bee's mouth, what happened was it very quickly became apparent that the friendliness of the room was the thing making it... changing it from just being... open mic night, people walking around muttering over you, whatever, to like a really lovely, intimate feeling. And you kept that going when you were chatting. But it was like, the feeling for me was like, it was almost like campfire storytelling vibe.
It was a bit, because it was kind of like a circle-y setup as well. It felt like we were all in a circle, like...
It's a brilliant room for over, that.
Yeah, it really is.
And you can never have, you can only get about 50 people in there, I think, if that, right?
Yeah.
But I absolutely adore it in that room.
Yeah,
and we've
it's
done,
so
we've done
cute.
Two now. We've both been at both of them. Well, the first one was a bit of a mixed bag. Me and my mate Pete, a little bit of a sort of Simon and Garfunkel-esque sort of double-acted guitar-y bits.
That was great,
right? Then Delphine gets up, being like ethereal... pop space child. Describe what your sound
like.
What do you think your sound?
You just said it. Ethereal pop space child. I love the child part as well. I always try and like pin it down without mentioning artists, because I don't want to like copy anybody or anything. So I would say it's dream pop, art pop. I've recently heard the term slow core or sad core. Yeah, I feel like some songs are like that. So very dreamy, like a little bit spacey sometimes.
It's quite intricate as well. The arrangements and the mute, you know.
Oh, sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I just go ham.
If you like the production, because obviously, and it's not like you're, you know, it's not like creating a record to release it, but you're, when you're singing to a whole sort of backing track, is that the same? Is it mixed the same as what you would put up on Spotify, but you've just taken the vocals off and you're playing along to it?
Yes. Sometimes sometimes I have to like add an instrument to fill up the vocals that would be on there, because sometimes I have like loads of backing vocals, and if I then take all the vocals off, I then have to add something else to like fill it up a little bit. But a lot of them... The problem for me is that like my main instrument is piano.
Yeah.
But for these gigs, it's really difficult to bring a piano along.
Yeah.
So a lot of my backing tracks
are just
like notoriously
difficult
piano.
To get down the stairs, aren't they?
Yeah. yes, they really are. And like, none of the places really have their own piano. So like, a lot of backing tracks are just like piano with maybe some strings or maybe some other instruments. But then the high production ones, I just want to go ham, because I want to show you all sides of me. I want to show you the acoustic guitar side that I just play live. I want to show you the piano side, and then like the absolute crazy space. What did you say? Crazy
ethereal space child.
Yes, that side.
But
as well.
Yeah, though. I mean, I think what was interesting was for the people sitting there, they're going, "Here we go." They're being friendly. They're coming along. Like, my mates, anyway, like, we're coming along to watch this acoustic night. It's like, oh, it's already not an acoustic night.
Yeah.
We started like that, but then you've got up and the backing track vibe, but then you've pulled your acoustic out, to remind them that, you know, it is still a sort of intimate little live music night.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really smart. And then I've got another person who I'd seen out and about called Frankie LG, and her band do like soul, not soul, no, like jazz. Jazz, yeah. Poppy but jazzy, yeah. Right? And if she was going to do a cover, Frankie could nail like Amy Winehouse type stuff, but also does a brilliant cover of Andy Williams. What's the title of the song? It's just too good to be true.
Oh, yeah. Can't Take My Eyes Off You.
Can't, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Just try and be professional, please.
What? You have a really good last name.
Yeah, it's pretty strong, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I'm not marrying you. So, but Frankie, they sounded great. And what was interesting is I was a bit out of my depth, right? I've not put a night on before. I'm not looking after the sound. And it's only a little mixing thing. But I was like, okay, oh, you've brought a piano with you. Now you've got like a bass. And okay, yeah. There's loads of you. Oh, God. And they were like, don't worry, old man, move out of the way. We are music students.
Yeah, we know
and
this.
They just took over and sorted the sound out, and I could just enjoy it. I wasn't sure how I was going to handle anything other than person, guitar, mic.
Yeah.
But it just looked after itself, and it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And you were all brilliant. And then, obviously, later on, I ended the night strumming and singing. And I make backing tracks.
Yeah.
But I also... for those cheapo pay me to sing in your Wetherspoons gigs, I'm very happy to download a backing track a busking type
That'll
song
be faster, yeah.
And I actually don't mind doing that when I'm busking as well. People like it.
Yeah.
It's like, because they're going, oh, I know this,
yeah, and they sing along. But it's kind of like karaoke,
exactly, right? But which I also love.
I do too.
I don't think anything makes me happier than karaoke.
If
I think about it.
I think it's such a guilty pleasure, though. You can't really admit that you love karaoke, but no. you really do.
Well, I grew up in a pub in the 90s when karaoke first came in, and it was like, are you fucking kidding me? The music exists, and you sing over it.
Yeah.
You know, because before that, it was literally just hairbrushes in the mirror, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, anyway, so the night was great, and the feeling of how much everyone enjoyed it and how friendly it was one thing, but then the other thing was, like yourself and Frankie and all that, their mates had come to watch, and there was other people there who were in bands going, can we do the next one?
Yeah.
And that's happened at the second one as well. So now there's like a little crew of people.
Yeah.
Like we're seeding a little. Not, I'm not saying we're starting a scene, but there is a scene here,
and
I think that the timing of the Little Stupid Hearts Club night coming along, and now we've basically got on, and you got in touch with me and said, look, you're doing this podcast thing. I was sort of interested in doing some podcasts, so I was like, yeah, all right, you know, don't know what I can tell you about it other than that I just crack on with it. But then we met up, didn't we?
Yeah.
And then, like, it got interesting quite quickly, didn't it? Do you want to say some stuff?
Yeah. Love saying some stuff. Yeah, to be honest, you did give me quite a lot of like information about podcasts, because I just generally don't know anything about them. I know that I like listening to them, but I don't know anything about the production side. So then when we met up, I feel like I could tell that this is a good fit, because as we were talking, you gave me so many ideas, and I feel like our conversation gave you a lot of ideas as well. Like,
yeah,
the thing kind of produced itself
as we were talking. Hang on a minute, didn't we?
Yeah. And yeah, so then we came up with a podcast that mm-hmm. is called the Music Baby Podcast, or mm-hmm. Music Baby. And it's just going to be about that, like being an independent musician, like all those people that we meet on those nights, and like bands who are trying to make it, and mm-hmm. what that life is like, basically just talking about this stage that we're at. That's so, so precious. Because the thing about being a music baby and being an independent artist or like a DIY musician or whatever
mm-hmm.
is once you make it, you can't go back to this stage. Like, this stage is only for now. But if you like get some popularity, if you get signed by a label or something, I don't think it's really possible to go back. Because once people know you, they can't unknow you. Like,
yeah, yeah.
So I feel like really enjoying this stage that we're at is so,
embryonic,
so important.
Embryonic stage, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're all getting good at what you're doing.
Yeah, like figuring things out, like meeting people, like learning stuff is such an interesting stage. Like people don't do stuff for you, so you have to learn to do everything yourself, which can be annoying, but it can also be really, really good because you end up having so many skills that you can use for your own project. And it's just like, we just talk about that on the podcast and everything that we've learned, and we're going to have guests on and we're going to like pick them from those great Stupid Hearts Club nights.
Yeah. Basically, the sort of realization was that even though, I mean, it took me a minute for my old brain to sort of go, how can we do this, right? Obviously, you could, it was like, yeah, you've got an idea there, do it. But how can it be like a thing that we're helping each other with? But then once a month, we'll do like a crossover, right?
Yeah.
Because you're going to be doing yours kind of every week.
Yeah.
So basically, when we started talking about how The Music Baby is a brilliant idea, or Music Baby, we're not quite landed on the exact title yet, but anyway, Music Baby is the thing. Delphine is the Music Baby. Let's make that clear. But the other thing is, you're the expert and I'm not. So, annoyingly, as you pointed out, I'm also a Music Baby because it's only a year since I've gone, do you know what, I want to like get into this and learn it. And to be fair, it isn't only young people that are out there doing this stuff, but it's given me, I'm getting energy off the younger people in the scene because they're up for it, and also you lot are harder working and proactive. And so as soon as we said, oh yeah, that could be a good idea, that Delphine, yeah, I mean, I've already got this podcast, but if you're the voice of your generation, and we do a YouTube channel and a podcast and it's called The Music Baby and we're affiliated with each other and I help you get it sorted and you help me with some of my bits and da da da, and we collab a bit, it was like, I'm all like, what if, and we could, and then like the next day you were like, okay, I've shot a pilot, now what? And I was like, oh, this is great.
I'm very impatient.
It's great.
If I have an idea and I'm excited, I need to do it right now. I have to finish it right then.
I mean, I do relate to that, but it's like, with mine, it's more like the selective energy of I'm excited, I'm interested. It's like ADHD thing. Like hyper-focus, completely in love with the thing.
Yeah.
And then when I've done it a bit, then it's like, oh, that's done. And then... And then someone will be like, when's the second one? And I'll be like,
what do you mean? What's the second one? I did the thing.
We're obviously sort of helping each other with this. But you've got to realise that you are absolutely as helpful to me as the other way around, because you're up for it. And you will make sure that this happens, even though I'm sort of helping it along. And we're going to try and like package it up and get sponsors and whatever. We've got a conversation started with a local studio. We've got ideas about brands, maybe. But basically, it's just this idea that here's a little idea for a podcast that serves a community, which is young, upcoming musicians, hosted by someone who's right in the middle of that, or is like just 2 or 3 years on from those people. And you are like sharing your experiences and your advice. And it sounds like it's really useful. It made me so excited when we went, oh my God. And I jokingly sent you a message saying, how's the Music Baby?
Yeah.
Because like when you did Stupid Hearts Club, obviously like you're younger than me and whatever. And then I was like, why have I just sent, like, I don't know how old you are, 20 something, right?
Oh, yeah, let's say that.
Why have I just sent a message to a woman in her 20s calling her the Music Baby? You might have literally thrown your phone in the sea or taken it to the police. And then we chatted and said, oh, when should we, do you want to meet up? Because I want you on the podcast. Let's meet up and have a chat and work out what songs we could do. And you were like, this is weird. And I was like, what? And you were like, I was thinking of doing a podcast called The Music Baby. And we both just went, dun, dun, dun. Now that's, it's like, well, now it has to happen.
Yes. But I already wrote down kind of like some ideas about the Music Baby podcast. And I think at the very bottom of the page, I put the name will be Music Baby.
Wow.
And just as I started telling you about it, or we were talking about it, you then dropped, it should be called Music Baby. And I was I just thought that as well. We had the same thoughts so many times about this project. That's why I think it's just the right thing to do, because we have so many thoughts that are just the same at the same time.
So to keep everyone in the loop, it's probably going to take a few more weeks until this thing is at a state where we're sort of banging on about it on Instagram, etc. But in the near future, I mean, what we're doing is we're building it so that it's ace, and then we're gonna try and get commercial interest in it. Thank you. And then it'll be like a real podcast with stuff happening, and there'll be, I mean, Delphine does brilliant vlog style, YouTube channel style podcasts on a subject to do with the world of young musicians. Then there's going to be, because we're meeting all these young artists that are brilliant, I mean, I'd like to interview some of them, but it makes sense that you interview all those people and do little sessions with them and little strums.
Yeah.
But like, I'm already going off and finding guests and that, but I'm finding that also, it sort of frees me up to think, I'm going to try a little bit harder to get access to people who are a bit further down the line, or a lot further down the line in terms of experience where they are in their careers. Because when you think about it, my mission is to find out what is the whole universe of somehow making a living out of music.
Yeah.
And your mission is helping people get started. Yeah. So like, then we're thinking that once a month I'll be on Delphine's podcast, and we will be checking in with each other about what we've found, like, to like present us on like a culture show type thing.
Could do a little PowerPoint presentation. This is what I discovered this week.
Yeah. We sent Music Grandad up to Huddersfield to meet this new... Yeah, it'll be like that, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really excited about it. And
there is an example episode up on YouTube, just mm-hmm. as like a little teaser episode of like an in and out list that I curated for 2024 of like music trends in and out. So good, that's point. Like an example if you do want to check that out. But the proper episodes are coming in the next few weeks.
I will put the link to anything we want people to see.
Yes.
I will put it in the podcast notes. Thank you. Thank you. Well, wasn't that lovely? You've now heard Delphine speak for herself after I shut up. The music baby and the music dad. While we were still figuring out what we wanted to do, you know, how we wanted these projects to work and how we wanted them to live together. So, yeah, since then, we have created a whole month of content for the Music Baby podcast, which we are polishing up and getting ready to launch on around, I think, the 7th of June. But, you know, today, this is me putting this up, is me seeding the first episode of the Music Dad podcast. And I thought the best way to start was to talk about what I'm doing and then let you meet Delphine and then talk about what she's doing and just get you all on board with the idea of this little symbiotic world. My music's nothing like Delphine's music, and her music's nothing like my music, but I understand where her music comes from, especially because she talks about a lot of her... lyrically, a lot of her songs come from quite a literary place, and there's a real depth to them that makes me really connect with her songs. So, not too long ago, she wrote a song called Almost Midnight at a Motorway Service Station, and it gave me all kinds of goosebumps. So I said, could we sing that one, please? And this is how that went.
Midnight at a motorway service station. You look like a Mazzy Star song, curled up in the corner, you're all alone. Your lips tinted in a velvet blue from the wine that stood in front of you. Tell me your plans, don't mention the past. Oh, tell me quick, cause nothing here lasts. It's almost midnight, the clocks will change, the sun will come up and the road awaits. It's almost midnight at a motorway service station. almost midnight at a motorway service station. Where time and place don't run quite the same way. Borrowed metal, nothing's built to stay. We laugh about the world we left behind. Scared of a future that's even less kind. It's almost midnight at a motorway service station. In a way, a lonely place in heaven.
Play that a couple of little live nights that we both did, or maybe one open mic, and maybe she did it at, and she put it on Instagram, and I was just like, that's really pretty. But then when I was in a room with her singing it, I was like, this is really kind of emotional, and it's given me all sorts of ideas of writing a musical with her and all of this stuff. Anyway, getting ahead of myself. So, please look forward to lots more fun from the Music Dad podcast and the Music Baby podcast. So, you've had enough. Brush your teeth, get to fucking bed. And remember, if you want to keep your music alive, come and see your dad.